That's a future episode.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 14 of the Board Game Gateway podcast. The Board Game Gateway, we are your entryway into the world of game, tabletop games, board games, and games in general. We hope you have a lovely time here. My name is Nima, and I am your host for this evening. Hello, and welcome to my co-host for this evening, Mr. Ralph.
Hello.
And Mr. Matt.
Hello.
Can never take it away from us now, Blake. If you don't understand what we're talking about, you probably need to go back and listen to the few episodes beforehand to kind of understand the meta joke that's been forming over the past 14.
Yeah, because Blake's actually not with us tonight, so we thought we'll all give him a good hello.
Yeah,
he did say he was going to the patent office today to patent the catchphrase, and we had to get in before he did.
It's too slow now. We're squatting on it.
You know, he has to copy right now, buddy.
Has to go and find it. But yes, our other co-host Blake could not be with us this evening. Damn shift work, working 4 days on, 4 days off, but he is here in the proverbial spirit. But we are now going to be getting into some of the games that we've been playing over the past week. We'll be talking about our gateway game of the week, which this week is Formula D, and then finally we'll be taking you through our theme of the episode, which is racing games and why you would like them, why you won't like them, what's good, what's bad, all that kind of stuff. Given that the Formula One World Championship is kind of wrapping up, they've only got three races left. It's kind of all...
Well, I mean, the championship's technically over. There's just three races that they haven't
done. Three races left, and basically Red Bull are now number one. And they're basically, it's theirs for the taking now. But we won't talk about the cost cap or anything like that. This is not a...
No, don't mention the war.
Oh, we won't. Absolutely. But we'll get into what we've been playing this week. And we're going to start this week with Ralph. We're going to start with you.
Yeah, sure thing. So I had my first solo game of Nemesis Lockdown this week. Last week I said Nemesis was in my top 10, and Nemesis Lockdown is pretty much the same game. There's a few little additions. Instead of being on a spaceship, you're on Mars, on a space station, and you know, there's an alien there, and you're just trying to escape the little facility or lock yourself in a cupboard and hide, essentially. And it felt like the same game to me.
So the solo version, yeah?
Yeah, so there's a solo version in the original Nemesis as well, and I was mostly just doing it to learn the rules, just to play it one day with like four or five people, really, because, you know, I'd rather learn a game and then teach people rather than let's all just fumble through it. I find that's the best experience. Yeah.
I used to do that, and I quickly fell out of that because I realized it's not a fun experience for anyone.
Yeah.
Including yourself.
Yeah.
And I've been there where friends like just purchased a game and like literally go, oh, you want to play this? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then they unwrap it in front of me and they don't know how to play. And I'm like, let's play something else.
Yeah. I will say that if I've said it to people before, saying, look, I don't know how to play this game, and I said this like, to Tom and a couple of other my friends and whatnot, but we've said, like, there have been times where they've said they want to play the game, and I've said, I don't know it yet, we can, but you'll have to understand that we'll be learning the game together. Yeah. Are you okay with that? And that's fine.
Yeah,
and we did that with Brass. Like, yeah, we both started to do that, into that together, because it was just something that we both
wanted to
play, yeah.
And that's good if multiple people want to learn a game.
Yeah.
And I've been in the situation where we spoke about a game called Alchemist before, and we knew how to play, but there's a logic puzzle to it that's a really complicated Sudoku. We watched a 20-minute YouTube video. We didn't read the rule book. We go, all right, let's watch this video together. We'll nut it out.
We'll hope and pray.
So let's come back to Nemesis, though. So you said basically it's the standalone version, but it's basically the same game. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the same feel. There's different aliens in it, but they sort of function the same way. So, yeah, I had my first game of that this week, and that was pretty awesome. So I'm going to give that another go just to learn.
I've got to say, if it was me inside a spaceship, the cupboard would be my option.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, definitely.
Just lock myself in a cupboard and hope
there's food in there.
Yeah, that's... Well... I'm okay to starve to death. I just don't want to be eaten by an alien.
So after your first playthrough, though, how do you find it compared to normal Nemesis? Same sort of game? Do you prefer multiplayer? How are you finding it so far?
I think I prefer Lockdown better because there's more ways out of the ship or the area.
Right, okay.
So you've got more escape options. There's a bit more, I wouldn't say luck, but there's more variability in it. So there's more. There's more game. There's more playthrough in it. But I feel like it will give you the same feeling. It's kind of like watching, like Fast and Furious 1 and Fast and Furious 2. They're both good movies, but they give you the similar type of vibe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. So that was Nemesis, Lockdown.
Yeah. That's a good segue into tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean, look,
it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, right? Winning is winning. Family is board games.
Ejectosino, baby. anyway, I would like to tell you about a game that I played on this weekend. We had our local board game meetup on Friday, and I got to play a game of Carnegie. And Carnegie is a game released in this year, actually. And it is a...
That's a Lacerda game, right?
Yeah, it's a very, very heavy game. We played it at two players with a member of the group called James. He introduced it to me. Now, he also has the deluxe set, so he has, like, the cubes, they were legitimate metal cubes that actually had some weight behind them and all this stuff. But the game itself is one of these heavy style of Euro games where you are basically having a whole bunch of factories with workers in them, and those workers can do four sorts of actions depending on what factories they're currently in, and then that affects the board, and the main board has got to do with the continental United States, which is separated into four different territories, if you will, and then you're trying to balance putting meeples in specific areas, and because when someone activates that area, that's when you get income. So the game is very much, I'm really underselling this game because I don't really want to go too hard into it, because when I say it's a lot in the game, like I understood it really, really actually quite easily, but there's a lot to this game. The meat of the game comes from, you have four different sorts of factories that you can have, and each of those factories can be activated or will be activated five times throughout the whole game for a maximum of 20 moves, right? So 20 rounds and you're over. And that sounds like a lot-ish, but I can tell you that there's not a lot, because you're trying to balance researching upgrades to your income by also balancing where you put your workers, because a lot of the actions are use a worker in a factory, then send them out into the continental United States. So once you use an action, you now need to bring in more workers to replace them to be able to do those actions again. And then you're trying to build more buildings. What I'm saying sounds very Euro-y.
It's a massive engine of the game.
Yeah, and it's like one of the main concepts of the game is that you have workers, and so you start the game with six factories and you can build some more, but you actually have a movement. So you're moving workers orthogonally around your player board, trying to move them into spaces to be able to activate stuff. Now, one of the things that James did in a couple of turns was that I didn't have any workers on my research building. So he took the research action specifically because he knew that he could get it and I would get nothing out of it. Now, it meant that I still got some income, but it meant that he started going further up the research track than I did, a lot faster than I did. But what I was doing was something else. Now, he ended up winning by about 15 points. So, like, he ended the game on, like, 109 and I was on a 94 or something like that. So that gives you an idea of how many points it was. But the game itself really hooked me in with a couple of things. One, the art style and the presentation of the game was really good. The actual, the deluxe metal cubes and stuff, I can take them or leave them. It's really nice to hold weighty cubes, but, you know, but the second thing that really took me in was that the research track is that you get a double layer board, and then in these board you have these four, like, strips, and they just slot into the board, and then you start researching stuff, you pull these strips further out, showing, like, oh, now instead of only getting one cube, I get two cubes, and instead of only getting $3 income, I'm now on $5 income, and
are they hidden until you expose them?
Yes, they push into the game board that you're playing, and then you eventually pull them out.
It's like a double layered board.
I get the feeling that Big Combo, Big Points wouldn't like that because he wouldn't know how to actually spend his time. Right? Which track would he go? He'd probably still like it. But he's the planner. He's the guy who looks four steps ahead. So if he can't see four steps ahead, that's a really interesting
mechanic. But that's the thing, right? But with typically these very heavy Euros, you can see that far ahead.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've heard of like a hidden mechanic.
So it's not hidden from you. It's just hidden out of sight so you can only, like, whatever is revealed. And we all have the same ones. So it's nice if you have a different income, but I can see what you're up to. And the good thing about this ticker tape is it has a little cog on the end of it. And that cog actually shows you how much research each level requires and what each level has. So even though you can't see it under the board, you can actually see what I'm going for.
Right.
The game itself, if it sounds like I'm underselling this game for people who've played it, it's probably, I probably am. But I really, really loved this game. Now, we played it only a two-player, and we finished it in just over an hour and a half.
Wow. That's really good for one of those games.
James
is a good teacher.
He's a really good teacher. I like to think also, having taught as many games as I have, like, I picked up the systems really quickly. Yeah. A lot of my time spent in the game, though, came from me actually going, oh, that's right, I can do this. And oh, that's right. And it was like my mind going, oh, that's right, remember, you can do all this stuff. But I will say, I never really forgot anything. The iconology was really good, so I could see everything. But it was just kind of understanding the way that the systems meshed together was where that puzzle was. I will admit, though, so last time that I played a game with James was Age of Steam, which we talked about, and he was one of the two players that romped me in that game. Whereas in this one, I thought he was going to beat me again, and he did, but I was a lot closer than I gave myself credit for. So I was saying, I came out of this one going, I had nowhere near as much brain burn from this game as I did from Age of Steam. I would really think this game actually starts to become even better at three or four players, because there is a whole mechanic of area control over these cities where you're trying to put tokens, your research tokens, into cities for control. And you're trying to link them in various ways, which I really haven't talked about because I have to stop somewhere. But I can say that this is a game that I did see on Board Game Arena, and I refused to learn it on Board Game Arena. And I'm so glad I did, because now I'm like, I just want to play it in person again. It was really good.
Cool.
Yeah, I had a similar experience previously with Gaia Project. We played it. It's a heavy Euro, but it's a lot smaller than Carnegie. But we played it in real life, and it took me a bit to wrap my head around the systems. But I've done that, and then I've played it on Board Game Arena, and I'm like, nah, it's better in person.
Yeah, there's a lot of those games.
Because like, you need to understand what happens when I do this, like, rather than having it all automated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've just finished playing Wingspan over
BGA
on BGA, but over correspondence.
Oh, cool.
I didn't really like it. I liked the game, and I like Wing, but I don't like playing it like, hey, you have 2 days to get your turn done, so you can have with three players theoretically one turn every 5 days.
I much prefer to play it between friends, and then that way you can just message each other and say, it's your turn, and go, yeah, I'll get around to it.
Yeah, but that was right. But there was one other game that I did play at the meetup, but I'm not going to talk about it in this segment because it is going to come up in the later parts of the segment.
Ooh, so that's exciting.
That. So I will get to that. So that was Carnegie. And so finally, Matt, I know, look, you...
It's been a bit of a big week, but not in the board game sense for me.
Yes, you're on a dry spill.
Yes, it has been. But we did play a couple of games at a couple of parties, but they're, you know, party games and 5 second rule and things like that.
One game that we did play at the end of last week we didn't talk about it, but we did play a game of Break the Code.
We did.
So we haven't talked about it. Would you like to talk about that one for this week's podcast?
Would like to do that fresh and play it again.
All right.
I enjoyed my... I won both of those, didn't
you
I?
You did. You won. We played three games.
That's all I'll say at the moment.
We played three games of it. One of them was basically the teach, and then we stopped halfway because
I stuffed up.
No, because someone walked in as well. Because someone walked in, and we decided, let's just play it at three or four players. I can't, because I taught. Anyway, but then you won the next two. So we'll talk about that, but I do want to talk about Break the Code another day, because we talked about logic deduction games, and I didn't have this game at the time. Mm. It has now become my new favorite logic and deduction game, so we will talk
about
that.
We'll circle back on that one.
Actually, just speaking about like favorite games and stuff, so we all love Twilight Imperium on this podcast. And recently we just unveiled our unboxing video of Twilight Inscription.
Yes.
The roll and write version of it. And we had a game of it a few weeks ago, Neil. I'm curious to see what you think.
Yeah, so we did. So for those of you who don't know about Twilight Inscription or roll and writes are basically the idea of a Yahtzee-style game. Roll dice, write in something on a sheet. And Twilight Inscription is the mammoth boy. You don't have one sheet. You don't have two sheets. You have four sheets. And so each sheet represents a different kind of... you know, one is warfare, one is research.
It took up the whole table.
We played on this table, and with three of us, you're like... and you can play up to eight players. Now, when you play up to eight players, we use the term multiplayer solitaire quite a bit, and that kind of revolves around the idea of, like, there's not a lot of player interaction going on. There is some. In the warfare board, I have to have a better army than you do and my neighbor. Mm. But outside of you two as my neighbors, there's not really a lot of what you're doing is affecting what I'm doing. Where I'm kind of playing solitaire, but in a multiplayer environment, hence the saying.
Mm.
But from a game, this is easily the heaviest Roll and Write I've ever played.
Okay.
By far. And there were a few things that did take a little bit for me to understand. I did win the game, which I was very happy about. I didn't think I was going to win because I went a completely different route than you and Blake did when we played at three players. I decided to go full on down the market track or whatever it was, and you guys were going full planet exploration. And somehow I snuck a win here. I didn't understand it.
It was a very close game from memory.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so you've got four different boards on there. One's exploration, navigation, industry, and warfare. They all do...
Industry, baby!
Yeah, I basically never touched my industry one in our game, but I've played the game three times now. It's definitely not Twilight Imperium. It's more just a good roll and write game. It is a good game.
Universe, yeah?
Yeah, in the same universe. You get the same characters. Things are called the same names, like technology, but they do something different.
Yeah.
So there's some opportunities that I feel like they missed. And there's, yeah, definitely, like, it's a good game.
Hmm.
I need to show you Hadrian's Wall one day, Nate, because that is the heaviest roll and write that I've played. But it's odd, there's a couple of different ways you can interact with other players in that game. However, it's a more solitaire experience, which is strange because it's less of a roll and write than it is a worker placement, because you have workers and you can put your workers on the track, and when you put a worker in that specific zone, you basically cross off a little check on the sheet, and then you lose that worker physically, but then you might get different workers and they all do different things. So it's a worker placement roll and write, and it's a really interesting game.
I'd be looking forward to trying that out as well. I think you kind of started to touch on the main point about Twilight Inscription, which is that if you like Twilight Imperium, it's not by any means saying you're going to like this game. You have to like Roll and Write first before you even like this game. I love Twilight Imperium, but I also love That's Pretty Clever. So I knew as soon as I saw it, I'm like, this is going to be right up my alley. Combo. The theme is what I love, and I like that style of the game. So long as the mechanics mesh really well. Like, I played my initial race was basically like, hey, go to the exploration board and put some bonuses all around the place, and if you can get there, you get these bonuses.
And that was really thematic because you played as Clan of Saar, and Clan of Saar, in the main game, Twilight Imperium, they don't have a home base, and they just sort of roam the galaxy and find their way, and that's kind of how they played in the Roll and Write as well.
Yeah, so pretty much.
That was really cool.
So I used that to my advantage to get an early game economy going, and then I decided, right, well, rather than exploring, I'm just going to go... Sorry, rather than putting all my home base stuff, I'm just going to go and be industrious, right? And so that's the game. I really liked it. Now, I need to get a few more plays under my belt to kind of really give a proper feeling, but I certainly feel that it's about a good 7.5 or an 8. It's not...
Did you both purchase this one as well?
Or is it just
I was going to, yeah, but then Ralph said he bought it, and I'm like, I'll just hold off and see. And when I say it's a 7.5 or an 8, it would be happy to have in my collection. However, I'm not running out to buy it anymore. I feel like I could just ask Ralph, could I borrow his? And 100%. I think that'd be fine. Yeah. Whereas some other games, I'm like, nah, need that in my collection.
When you come back to the actual writing part of the Roll and Write, like, how much replayability is it? Is it whiteboards and stuff?
So they're essentially whiteboards, and it goes to eight players. So what's there's like over 32
boards.
There's 32 boards. They're all double-sided,
yeah,
and they're all asymmetric. So you only end up with four of these 32 boards, and it's basically you're always going to be different
game. Cool.
But one of the objectives was be one of the first players to get to Mechator Rex. Yeah. I think that's a base objective in the game all the time. I had to go through like two wormholes and like 16 exploration dice, and Blake got there in two turns.
Literally,
and I was like,
the second
turn I was like, what? So like, you have to look at your boards and see what your boards are good at. You got to work that out in each game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I think if you are a fan, and I think it would play great at single player as well, it would be a really nice, enjoyable experience. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I want to play some more of it. We played it, a three-player game of Twilight Imperium, in an hour and 20.
Cool.
That's how long the game took.
And Twilight Inscription,
sorry,
that is.
People, I put the air quotes there, but yes, Twilight Inscription in an hour and 20. Right, but yeah. Like you did get that feeling of that Twilight Imperium-esque stuff.
It's kind of like watching the Lion King 1.5 instead of the Lion King. You know what I mean? Like, it's still good, but it's not the Lion King.
1.5?
Yeah, goodness. That's Timon and Pumbaa's point of view, if you haven't seen it. It's good, but it's not the Lion King.
It's mostly just people eating bugs.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, well, that was Twilight Inscription, though.
Sorry, I should have done a racing reference there.
Racing to Mechatol Rex there at the end, weren't we? Anyway, yeah. So that was Twilight Inscription. Now we're going to move on to our gateway game of the week. And this week, our gateway game of the week is, sticking with our racing theme, is Formula D. Formula D is designed by Laurent Laveur and Eric Randall and published by Asmodee Games.
Wait, what year did it come out?
It came out in 2008.
I thought it came out in the 90s. No, because that's a reprint.
So Formula D, which is the French version.
D-E-E, right?
D-E, Umbla, or whatever it is. Yeah. The French Umbla series, or whatever, I don't know, whatever they call it. Anyway, but that's the game itself has been around for a long time, and in sticking with racing game themes, we're going to take you through. So Formula D, I'll give you the brief overview. Formula D is basically a Formula One racing game where you are given a track. That track has three different lanes. You're each given a car or two cars, depending on how many you want to play with. And then you're given a little plastic box. And that little plastic box has got your health points of your car and your gears. You also have a beginner and advanced side. However, I've never actually played with the advanced side. I only ever play it with the easy side. The advanced side's got a whole bunch of things, like you can even like your shocks, your tires, brakes.
I'll go into that shortly because there's some interesting things
here. But it is quite simply a Formula One race. It's literally one lap of a circuit of your choice, of whatever the game provides you. The default game, I believe, is Monaco. We tonight actually played on the Singapore map, which is quite fun. And then quite simply, you roll a dice. That dice starts off as a D4, so a four-sided dice. And it has like 1 to 2 on it, and then you move, and then you can shift up a gear.
It's a roll and move, really.
Yeah, it really is. It literally is a roll and move game in its simplest form. And then basically, where this game goes, well, Anthony, I hear you saying, or Neba, I hear you saying that, well, you just roll and move. Well, then where comes the strategy? Well, basically, in the corners, you have stopping zones that you have to stop in, and they give you a rating from 1 to 3. So if a corner has a rating of 1, that means you have to stop in that corner zone 1 time. In a corner of 2 times, 3, you guessed it, 3 times. And so where the strategy comes in, you're trying to time your luck and your rolling so that you're in the appropriate gear so that you can stop the appropriate amount of times in the car, in those zones, so that you can be ahead of anyone. But where the game really shines, Ralph, and I'll get you to kind of comment on this, which is that you can start to push your luck and try and maybe go, you know what, I'm going to try and race through this corner at a higher gear. Maybe I'll take a little bit of health points here, but at least I'll put me in a better position coming out of it.
So every car, every player who controls a car, they have 18 hit points or health points on the car. They call them wear points in the game. And if a corner has a recommended stopping value of 1, you need to stop in that corner once to not take any damage. However, if you're an adventurous driver like myself, you don't believe in brakes, you don't believe in shifting down gears, you just want to go straight through it, and because you have places to go. what you do, or what I do, is I don't stop on the corner and I just go straight through it. Typically, I do this once a race or so just to try and get a bit of an edge, and any excess spaces that you pass the stop. So if you don't stop by the end of the corner, any excess spots you go, if I go 6 spots forward, I get a bit ahead in the race, yes, but I lose 6 health points.
That's a third of your total hit points. It's a big chunk.
Yeah, so I tend to do this once or twice in the race because the way I see it is I see my health points as a resource and I may as well use it.
Too soon, Junior.
You certainly used it, that's for sure.
Yeah, but Matt, what did you think of the game?
I loved it. I don't know why I haven't played it before, honestly, but it was a very, very easy teach and start to play. Yeah. Like, we were up and running within, well, almost
5 minutes,
maybe 10 minutes at the very, very most, and that's including showing off the fancy side of the board and the lesser fancy side of the board,
yeah,
which was very exciting to see the other side. I'm keen to play that one. I loved it. It was fast, fun play. It felt like it was an actual race as well. Like, your decisions have consequences, but you can still ride the rail as it is,
mm-hmm.
As Ralph did to his demise.
Oh, well, I would have had it.
You had it until you did it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I loved it. I thought it was a lot. I wouldn't want to play it, maybe, as you said, to the 10-player capacity. That might be a bit of a slower game there. But I reckon 6 players on there would be a lot of fun.
6 players is about my maximum. You don't want to play 5 with 2 players each. You really 6. And we've played this at GoobaCon a couple of times. Now, the reason why I really like this game as well, I only rate it as about 6.5 or 7, really, out of 10. And the reason why I do that, though, is because the game at its core is quite simply a roll and move. That's all it is. And now, when you start playing at the higher player counts, there is a lot of downtime. And I found that when I am waiting, I know, like, okay, well, I've just got to roll the dice, move, then up or down a gear. Mm. And so when we played at those higher player counts, I remember I was very much in charge of admin, because I was like trying to keep people like, hey, Ralph, come on, like, you're up next. Matt, you're after him. Get ready, because I want you to just pick up the dice, roll, and move.
Yeah, go. What I found I was doing, and we just played it tonight, and I found, like, while Matt was just moving his car, I was like, oh, I'll just take my roll and start moving my car, and it just sort of sped it along a little bit.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, when you start not worrying about the whole idea of, like, you know, yes, you're shifting up or down, but so long as you make that choice before your next turn, role, yeah. I honestly feel like it doesn't really affect. I mean, it doesn't really affect what Matt's gonna do, because it could do, because Matt could go, well, Neba's only in gear 4, therefore I can afford to shift down. It can do that, but realistically, we were playing in a way like I'm just like, oh, here we go, baby. Yeah. Like, and that's and our race came down literally to the wire.
It's a gamble.
Yeah, look. And speaking of gambles, like, that's what our race came down to. Like, Ralph, you crashed out, but in the final corner, I was ahead by Matt by 2 or 3 spots. 2 spots, I think it was, and I rolled a 17 on the D20. And then I said, you need to roll a 19 or a 20, because I crossed the finish line to beat me, and you rolled a
20.
You rolled a 20 and won the race.
I mean, you called it, though, so, you know.
I'll just explain some mechanics.
It was all my fault.
That's right.
Yeah, please do.
I'll just explain a bit more about the game, seeing as this is our gateway game of the week. Yeah. I want to make sure our audience here knows what the game is. So, as we've been mentioning, you shift up a gear at the start or end of your turn. And as you shift up a gear, the farther along your car will get. But where this is cool is you get different size dice.
Mm.
So, with gear 1, you get a very small dice. It's just known as a D4, a 4-sided dice. But the numbers on it are only 1 or 2. So you're going to go really slow. And then as you go higher, you get like a D6, a normal dice, but it only has values 2 or 4 on it. So it slowly increases. And what I always love showing people and seeing their reaction is when you give them a dice that looks like a D20, but the numbers on it are 11 to 20.
Yeah.
And people just start scratching their heads a little bit.
I didn't gotten onto that until like the 3rd or 4th round. I was like, why aren't I rolling any 1s or 2s? Like, that's what I was aiming for.
Go up to gear 6, which is the highest gear, and it's a 30-sided dice with just the numbers 21 to 30. And it takes ages for this thing to stop rolling.
It's basically a golf ball.
It is. It is the size of a golf ball. So yeah, that's really cool. There's little things in the game where there's additional ways your car can take damage aside from just speeding through corners. If your car stops next to another car, both those players roll for damage. So they roll a standard D20, so a 20-sided dice, and a result of 1 to 4, you take a hit point of damage. So that was pretty much the basic version of this game. Did I miss anything?
The only other thing that you mentioned is that you do have the option of, if you're in really high gears, you can slam it down more than 1 gear in a turn, but you will take hit points. So if you're in gear 5 and you realize, I'm going
crunch
way,
that gearbox.
Yeah, I'm doing way too fast for this corner, you can go, I'm going to drop to gear 2, but you'll take 3 hit points of damage because you only allowed to shift down 1 per turn. So it does actually give you a bit of choice here to actually figure out, how do I actually want to play this? Do I want to ride the rail? Do I want to play safe? But if you want to win the race, you really do actually have to push it a little bit, because otherwise people who've taken a little bit more risk than you and have gotten away with it are going to win the race. And for me, that does feel like a real race. Like, you have to risk it sometimes, put yourself in a position where you're like,
there was one point earlier in the game, Matt, where you're like, I'm going to do, again, the D20, and you're like, I'm just going to push to this corner because I want to get in front, and you happen to roll way too big.
I rolled the 20 again.
You rolled the 20.
And almost sped through two corners.
Yeah, and so, but that put you in a position where, you know, all right, well, now you had to then play, okay, we'll have to slam my gearbox down and take a couple of hits, and it put you back, but you also didn't go flying through like Ralph did and flipped his car and blew his car up, you know.
You know what? Hearing you guys say that the player count at 10 is, like, slows the game down, I reckon this game, as far as gateway games, right, it's an attractive game. It has a lot, like, that was a lot of fun for a quick play. It's a big box game as well.
Mm.
So talk about getting people into the community. Like, this isn't just a, you know, a small box and a couple of bits of paper, right? This is a proper board game with lots of bits and pieces that you can actually hold and play with.
Mm.
It'd be interesting to try and find a mechanic, maybe a digital mechanic, to speed up that admin side, because, like, it maybe did like
a
feel,
chess timer and it passes to the next player or
something like that. I don't know, but like as you said, three players, it was quick. It was like, you know, I'll exciting.
Talk about another formula game after this segment that's kind of got a timer to it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But even like, I mean, maybe the digital version of this game plays at those bigger numbers better, because then you're not physically handling things. There's no downtime. Well, there's less downtime. I don't know, but. Or even a consecutive play, a group play where everyone has a set of dice and you all roll at the same time and it all resolves itself or something. I don't know.
I love this game at three players when everyone has two cars.
Yeah.
Like, you have like the two red cars or the two green cars and your cars are a racing team.
Yeah.
But it's a three-player game, but you have that racing team and you want to try and you get the most points. You know, you can finish second and third, but you still win on points, sort of thing.
And imagine there'd be, sorry to jump in, imagine there'd be room here for actual racing aficionados to really love this game and play it in those three laps, Grand Prix style, and actually have strategies about how they deal with, well, everything in the game. There's a lot more than just the roll and play. That's how we played it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get a lot more.
Oh, definitely.
There's legs out of the game.
So, we played one of the expansion maps. I think this game has about 8 or 10 different expansions, and they're all double sided maps.
Mm, they have one official racetrack from the F1 world and one street track, quote unquote, which is like a fun variation. Like, yeah.
So, like, there's quite a few in there. Honestly, if I was to play this game more, I'll probably pick up, I think the Chicago expansion was really interesting. But there's more advanced rules here. Like, and there's some basic rules that I just missed because it's been quite a while since I've played it. There's a thing called slipstreaming, which when you finish behind a car, you have an option where you can, like, it's kind of get free movement and kind of overtake that car. Which is really cool.
We just played crashing into the back of each other, didn't we?
Yeah, we just did that. Yeah.
You have to be going faster than them. There's some variations. Gear and
things like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of other stuff you can do as well, such as different, like, weather. You can give your drivers different personalities. But there's also some other stuff that you can do, which is that in the street versions of the side, you, like, you're in a street race.
I noticed there's police in the street
race. Yeah, so like, well, there's
potholes.
Well, there's actually like, there's the potholes are the bridges that you go under, but they have like speed checks, right? So it's like, you have to go through this line and whatever you rolled as you pass that line is your speed trap, right? So you're trying to go through, but they've also got like there's, you know, club, like, gangsters essentially don't like the fact that street races happen outside their thing, so if you rush past there and you don't get through there fast enough, they shoot your car and which so you lose HP. So there's all these like fun,
I've never heard of this.
They're in the road race
side. That's what I mean, like, this game wasn't very expensive. It looks like a big box game. It wasn't for the board games that I play, the more expensive.
It's about 60 Australian dollars.
Not too bad. But the amount of game here that I haven't seen is just insane.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There seems to be a lot of expandability into this, into this game. So in the category of gateways, this is probably a really good buy for someone who wants to take that next step of
definitely,
you know, having a showcase game, but not really getting into the Euro style.
I kind of do want to play a game with the advanced rules where, like, we all have an asymmetric character with different health points for different things, your brakes, your gearbox, your gear stick, your engine, and all the characters have special abilities
as
well, which are things like free movement. You know, you can ignore some health points, just some other little fun mechanics to the game. But you can dive in this game as deep as you want to. You can do a proper Grand Prix over many different races. You can just do several laps. And for qualifying, like pole position, we just rolled a D20 and the highest number got pole position. But in the rule book, you can do a qualifying lap where you just race the lap on your own to try and set the fastest time.
Yeah, you just basically how many rolls or how many turns it take you to get through. And then
that would be really cool. See if you can get a record or something.
Yeah, there you got that. So look, it is a really good... It is a great gateway game. Matt's giggling because he's currently... Go on, read what you found.
He found a special ability. So he's just reading the special
The character, Stanley Washington, who looks exactly as you picture him to look in your mind right now, his special ability is car radio. Once per race, Stanley thinks his car radio plays bad music, and he throws it out the window onto a car on an adjacent space, and then that car loses one hit point in a category to be defined by the dice.
That's awesome. I love that.
I just love the idea that he doesn't actually know that the car's there. He just throws it out the window and just happens. Like
also like that he has other spare radios that he just plugs in.
He can only do that once a game, can't he?
No, it's.
Oh yeah, that thing. But like
once per race. Sorry, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
once per
right,
race.
Right. That's really cool.
Just insane.
Yeah, I really dig this game. It's not a game that I play that often for a couple of reasons. One, it's so simple. Two, it's very the mechanics are so simple, like, you know, it's not really exciting to me to play. However, it's exciting to me to play, but I love watching people play this game. I love sitting back and then just like watching people start to go, oh, he's gonna risk it, he's gonna go for it, he's rushing through the three turn with two, the madman, how many, right? Like just watch people do it, and that's why I really love it.
I've owned this game for maybe 7 or 8 years now.
Same.
And I've played this with my nephews who at the time were about 10 years old, and my father-in-law and my mother-in-law, and the teach was nothing, and they all had a good time with it. The end was pretty thrilling because, you know, you got three or four cars coming to the end, and you know, it's just as you saw tonight, just that one roll and you win and everyone's cheering. So it's pretty awesome. Just wanted to read another special ability of a character is just when you cause someone to roll the black damage dice, this guy just makes you roll it twice. He's actually like a criminal or something. So there's lots of little fun things here.
Look, the game box says 14 plus. I highly disagree with that. This is easily, you can play this with 8 or 9 year olds.
Yeah,
easy.
I wonder why it's 14 plus.
I was thinking
maybe the advanced side would be 14 plus, but the basic side you could get away.
The way that we played it today, I could teach this to Robbie, I reckon.
Yeah, so easily. Anyway, so that's Formula D. Now, the reason we picked this as our gateway game of the week, though, is because our theme for the week is racing games. And what are the pros? What are the cons? What are some good racing games that we can recommend? And things like that. So we picked Formula D as our first game and our gateway game because we hope that you can understand how simple this game is to teach and how much of a fun time can be had with this game.
Who doesn't understand the concept of a race either, right? As far as themes go.
Yeah.
There's no great explanation that's needed, right?
Also, the mechanics of the game are also perfect because they literally take what you know from Monopoly. Roll the dice, move your character that many spaces, and this just says, all right, we're just going to do that. But and makes it fun, right? And that's what I really, I love that about this as well.
I love it. This is one of my beer and pretzels games. It's a game you can play while having a beer and eating a pretzel.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You don't have to worry about, you know, spilling stuff and... whatever. It kind of just makes it. So we wanted to talk about first and foremost what are the pros of a race game, and one of the first things that we just touched on that, which you said it's just easy to understand. I mean, who doesn't understand the concept of a race? You know, it, from all the way of, you know, I'm going to beat you, run to the tree, to these things as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest pro in any racing game's favor is that. There is no great explanation about what we're doing, right? You sit down, cool, we're going for a race. We're horse racing, we're car racing, we're whatever racing. Yep, everyone understands.
Camel racing.
Camel racing. We'll get to that.
So that's the first appeal. I mean, Ralph, I mean...
Yeah, so I actually had some friends over recently, and I'm going to just... segue into a different racing game at the moment. We played a game called Downforce, and we'll explain the game shortly, but essentially I was teaching two new players, and they are fairly gateway gamers. They're not really board game people. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. They picked it up rather quickly after half a lap. They got it. And well, finishing the race, it's another Formula One type game. And I was just round the last corner, and I just had the straight in front of me. I was clearly going to win the race. And when I play board games, I tend to put background music on. And just slowly I increase the volume, because coincidentally, The Winner Takes It All by ABBA was playing. And I didn't say anything. And my wife, she just looked over at me and she's like, "Ralph, you dig." She's like, "You put this on anyway." You
diabolical son of a bitch.
But anyway, so in Downforce, you actually bet. There's several times in the game where you bet as to which color car you think will win the race. And I was actually betting for my wife's car to win. So I played a card where I didn't win the race, and Tina actually overtook me and she won. And it was so funny because she looked over at me with the biggest smug smile because I played that card. And then I just went to her when the music actually timed. I just went, "I don't want to talk."
And you say that you're not into theatrical stuff.
Oh, I'm very theatrical.
Ralph is has the most flair for dramatics in this show.
Definitely.
Anyway, so another, we just touched on the other thing as well, which is, I think, as well, it brings out the competitiveness straight away for everyone. I mean, some people can be too competitive, but in general, I think you put a racing game in front of someone and they're just like, "Oh yeah, I know what I'm going to do. I've got to get there first." Mm. You know, so simple to understand. The other thing which I think I wanted to talk about, which is that, I think this style of game is very easy to recreate the feeling of what you're trying to recreate.
Hmm.
It's like, you know, some games have their theme and there's a disconnect between, you know, what we're actually doing versus what the mechanics make or let us do. Whereas a race game, especially these sort of games, it's very simple to go, okay, you know, well, you ended your turn next to that car, roll for damage. Hmm. Why? Because maybe you bumped into them. We need to find out. And so very easy, like that race really felt like a race, because Ralph, there was a couple of times where you were like, "Well, and Anthony Neva just passed him on the outside lane. Oh, Matt just passed him on the inside lane, right? We've ended in there and we had this shootout of a race going," and that was fantastic.
Yeah, and that just shines with more people in the game, with more cars on the track. It can get tense going into corners where people are cutting each other off, and like you feel the excitement all the way through the race.
Yeah. Matt, is there any other pros that you like about racing games or anything like that?
Well, are we sticking to just the car racing? Because there's other, obviously,
types of racing. No, just racing board games in general. We're not talking about just race games. I mean, we're not talking about Formula D only at the moment. We're talking about just what are some of the pros of racing games in general.
Because we could talk about Camel. Is it Camel Up or Camel Cup?
I've never played Camel Up.
Because the camels go up on top of each other.
I understand the concept, but then they win a cup at the end of it, right? So the trophy is a cup.
I've never seen or played it. Can you give me a quick rundown so I don't
We
feel
just
like
did. That's it.
Here.
There's right. camels, they stack right.
so
up.
So there's camels in a
race.
Cup like monkeys? Like the monkeys
yeah.
you band yeah. together out
yeah,
of the
basically,
cup?
Basically, yeah.
Here's the elevator pitch for a camel up. Right?
Good.
We are watching a camel race, okay? Right?
Do they race?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah.
These camels are racing around a board. We're in Egypt, right? So they're racing around from where we start, around the pyramid, and back to the starting position, right? Throughout this race, we're going to be rolling dice. We're going to be rolling dice to move these camels along the board. Yeah. However, camels are silly buggers. And if they land on the same spot as another camel, they don't share the space. They don't stand next to each other. Oh no, camels stack up on top of each other. And then, let's say, for example, I don't know, they just do. Have you ever ridden a camel?
I've never seen two camels standing on top of each other.
Have you been to Egypt lately?
No, I haven't been at all, actually.
Have you ever seen a camel in person?
Yes.
Well, I saw three of them.
They were standing in the exact same spot.
All right, but here's the thing, right?
Race season was over.
When camels stack up on top of each other, and there are six camels in this race, so theoretically you could have up to six camels stacking on each other.
Okay.
When the bottom camel moves, he takes the entire stack with him. So you're basically, you're betting, it's basically like similar to Downforce. It's a betting game where you don't actually, you don't own a camel. You're just betting on specific camels to win, and you're setting traps to help move camels forward and move camels back.
That sounds
back.
Really interesting.
Yeah, it's really stupid. It actually has a really fun dice rolling mechanic, which is that the pyramid actually comes with a pyramid that you have to put together, and the top of it is you put all six of these dice inside of this pyramid. You shake it, you pull it up, you put it upside down, and there's a little lever that you push, and it just drops one dice out of the pyramid onto the
board. I think we have to like end the episode now, so I can play.
Yeah, I think yeah, it was really good. But then we also have the, so I have the first edition of it. There is now a second edition that's come out.
You got the expansion for it, didn't you?
I did get the expansion for it as well. It is a Spiel des Jahres winner as well.
Oh, okay.
And this game is silly beyond belief, and we actually played it at 9 players or 8 players, I think. We played parents and my parents and our cousins, and like, there's nothing funnier than your mum going, it's like, no, don't let the white camel stack up, because she's like betting on the green camel, and then the green camel's now got the white, and the rule is whoever is on top of the stack, if a stack finishes, whoever's on top of the stack finished first.
Yeah, okay.
So you don't want to be on the bottom of the stack, you want to be on the top of the stack.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of silliness in board gaming. Like, I really enjoy it.
I'm pretty sure we actually played this once where stacking just didn't, like, it just naturally didn't occur. It just turned into a normal race, right?
Yeah.
And the game, it got a bit dull.
Yeah. Right?
The stacking really is what makes this game so good, because it's this element of, will I jump off the stack as well?
Yeah.
Or jump on the stack at the right time?
So I played a game of Bristol 1350 recently as well, and there were no mingles happening, so everyone was healthy for the majority of the game. So no one, like, it was a bit dull because there wasn't any excitement in it.
That's right. it's a favorite of that one.
Yeah, so we'll come from Camel Up, and we'll, so as you can hear, this is some of the great things that we love about racing games. They're so easy, they're very competitive, you can have some silly moments depending on board game mechanics, whatnot. But there are some cons that we do want to bring up with racing games. And one of the first ones that I want to bring up, which is first and foremost, we, as you talked about, they can be dull or not exciting in a board game sense because you are relying on random chance.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of skill, quote unquote, in these games. And so a game of Formula D can actually, you can just have the worst rolls after worst rolls after worst rolls, and you're just at the back of the pack, and you're not being able to do anything.
It's so funny though when someone is in the perfect gear for that moment and they stop one hex short of the little turn, the smallest little turn they have to nail, and they're one spot short.
And they're in sixth gear.
Yeah, and they can't go straight. That's just funny. So, like, someone else's demise is my enjoyment.
Yeah.
It happens to me too, though.
Absolutely. But, yeah, that's one thing. I mean, it's a very minor thing, but it is something
I think that's something that a lot of games do suffer from, right? If the cards haven't been dealt your way, whatever game it is, as I've had a couple of, right? Whatever random chance has just dealt you, not the dud cards, but just a bad run.
Yeah.
It makes your enjoyment a lot less.
But yes or no, because like in a game like a heavy Euro like Carnegie, you make the most of what resources you have at the time. But in a board game like Formula D, win or lose, it doesn't matter. It's just, for me, it's a good time. So you kind of, you got to take that yourself as to what you're expecting out of a board game.
I agree, but I also feel like in a lot of games that have dice or some sort of random element, there is the ability for you to mitigate your luck.
Yes.
Whereas in a game like Formula D, for example, there's no mitigation.
The gear you're in.
The gear you're in, yes, but that's kind of it. So you're trying to make the plans, but there's no like, oh, well, this turn I have the event card, which allows me to get +3 speed boost to help me in that moment where I missed it. No, that's not necessarily a bad thing specifically, but I'm just saying for some people, if you're not a fan of random chance, these games, a lot of the time, that's all they are.
I think once again, sticking in that gateway game category, most people are okay with that kind of stuff, right? We're talking serious gamers probably would go, that's not my, my
wheelhouse. But serious games would happily play this with young kids or something.
Oh, like for sure, yeah.
But I also do think there are a bunch of people who probably don't, some people may not like random chance, and that's just something that you just have to know going into it. If you're okay for it, then the experience will be great, but if you're not a fan of it, that is a con. I think that also leads up to one thing that Formula D doesn't have, which it doesn't have any sort of catch-up mechanic. Now, a few of these don't have, like, a few board games around the place don't really have catch-up mechanics, because you want the people who have made the best decisions
to win. However, this is a game where, again, if you're having bad rolls, or there are games, if you're at the back, you're just looking at going, I'm in last place. I don't even know how I get back into this
game. But in saying that, if you're at the back in a game like Formula D, sorry to keep bringing this around, I really like this game. I played this game so much. But if you're at the back, slow and steady sometimes wins the race, because you saw how a car can blow up. Cars in the lead tend to get close to each other. They tend to take damage, and they're going to blow up before the finish line, especially on some of the harder tracks.
Look, I agree with you as well. I agree. I just think.
But you're right. There is no catch-up mechanic.
No, there is none. And like, to some people, that can get them downhearted very quickly. Mm. If I'm looking at a game and I'm going, I don't know how I can get back into this game, you start going, ugh, why am I going to play this game?
So, I think as well, like on the catch-up mechanic in a three-player version, it's not really necessary, right? If you drop that far back anyway, it wouldn't make any difference. But in a larger player version, it probably does have a catch-up mechanic in everyone else is pushing their luck, right? And as you said, you're not entirely out of it, but...
But I say with a three-player game, I would typically play as a team where you have two cars each. So if one of your cars dies, that's okay.
But unlike other big board games where, you know, fourth round comes along and you go, I've made the wrong strategy this whole time and, you know, changing strategy now will completely ruin my game and I won't catch
that's
up.
Right,
but
yeah.
That you already know. Mm. At least in this game, there's still a chance that everyone else could die and you could just Stephen Bradbury it to the end, you know?
Yeah, so that's right, that's right.
Chuck a Bradbury and get in there. No, I agree as well. I think it's just something to be aware of. Look, Ralph, is there anything that you can think of that are cons of racing games, though, just to be aware of?
What's this in our document?
Ralph Crocky music.
I already mentioned that.
That was the winner take it all story.
Oh, that's that story.
Yeah,
okay.
That was that story.
When I first read it, I read it as Cockney music. I'm like, why is he? What's doing Cockney music for?
No,
he
no,
just
no,
likes
no.
to wink at you a lot.
If that's ever playing on my radio, I throw it out the window. we just want to talk about some of the other racing games that we play. So we mentioned Downforce earlier. Mm. So Downforce was actually how I kind of met Nee as well, and then we sort of realized we had some other connections as well, so that was pretty cool.
What a story that is, eh?
We told that in the first episode of the podcast. If you want to hear that, go on.
Yeah, so that was great. So board games always bring people together. But yeah, so Downforce is another Formula One type racing game. You own a car and you still sort of move your car along, but the way you do that is you play a deck of cards gets divided evenly throughout the players, and all the cards have a color with a number on it. So you might have a red card with the number 5, and that will move the red car 5 spaces. However, the cards may have other colors on it as well. Most likely they do. So you might have red 5 and then yellow 3 and then green 5 or something, and it moves those color cards along. So you're constantly pushing the other player's cards along. And then over the game, once the car crosses the yellow line, everyone has to put a bet in, and your betting is to which car will win the race. And you might even want to push someone else's car forward to try and make money, because the most money wins. It's not who wins the race.
Yep.
You get money for winning the race, but also you get money from your bets as well.
There's a few games like that, like Long Shot, the dice game, for example, is like that too, where it's a race game, and you may eventually buy a horse and be the owner of that horse, but at its core, it's more of a silly betting game where you're trying to move all the horses and then try and help other horses move and just hoping that some of these things come your way. Downforce, to me, feels like, compared to the Long Shot the Dice game, we've talked about it on another podcast, but Downforce to me does feel like you have a bit more agency over what cars move, because you actually pick the cards rather than Long Shot the Dice game rolling the dice and then that horse moves and everything else moves and hoped.
I love both of those games. I love Downforce because of that slow calculated thing where it's like, oh, if I move that car, that car's going to be blocked. And, you know, it's fun when you block other players, or then when you get blocked, you're kind of like, oh no, that card's wasted. But it's really cool. But it depends on the player count as to the agency. I played it at 4 players, so there's 3 other cards that are played before my turn. So really, it's a lottery. Mm. But I feel like the excitement of the race, Long Shot the Dice game displays that better, because like people are just moving your horses backwards or forwards, and other things trigger, and that's in a long shot. The dice game's a great role in, right? Believe it or not.
Yeah, I think you need to go back and listen to that one of the episodes. Look for the thumbnail where we have long shot in it. I believe it was like episode 10 or something like that, around that area where we.
No, that was it. Was early on in the season.
Maybe, yeah, maybe even earlier than that.
Oh, we're getting on now, aren't we?
Yeah, where is it? Episode 4. Look, we've been doing this for nearly 4 months, five months.
Episode 10
now.
Was our big NFL draw, wasn't it?
It was actually. Yeah, I can't look. That's the thing. It feels. Oh, cue feels the music. Like play them off, boys. Oh god, yeah, but I agree. There's a lot of really good ones. We don't want to talk about any more cons. I do want to talk about though another game that we played tonight. Beforehand, we've talked about horse racing, we've talked about camel racing, and now we've talked about Formula One racing. But what about the Tour de France, the bicycles? A game called Flammy Rouge or Flamme Rouge. I call it Flammy Rouge.
Because
I'm stupid, I'm an idiot.
You're very anti-European unless you play the games.
This is actually my favorite race game.
Grow a handlebar just to play it.
Exactly. Oh, this is actually my favorite. It's my favorite.
More worried
race
about
game.
The spandex that he wore.
Yeah, yeah, that was a bit tightening. Yeah, revealing.
Yeah, that's why you need to go to our YouTube channel to see that extra content.
I think we get banned for that.
is this the start of our OnlyFans universe?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, but Flamme Rouge is another one that I really love. It's basically a bicycle race where you control the sprinter and a kind of an overall kind, like it's called the roller. And essentially, you're in a Tour de France race where each of your bike guys have got a separate deck, and you literally draw four cards, pick one of those four cards, and depending on what number you show, that's how fast they move. And that's basically the game in a nutshell. You're literally racing down the track, and then you have different conditions, such as downhill sections of the track allow you to set a minimum. So even if I play at a two card, I can move five, or in the uphill, it's a maximum of five, right? So if I play a seven, too bad, you've just lost some movement. This game is really big on trying to get free movement or maximizing your free movement. One of the main mechanics is the slipstream drafting mechanic, which basically says if your rider is within two spots of the rider ahead of you, you get sucked into that to create a group, which is great because when you do drafting in this game, you start from the back to the front. And that means that theoretically, if you're playing some of these big races, we've played it at six players with everyone controlling two races, and it's great. There's so many bikes. But it means that theoretically, you could be in the back of the pack. Someone makes a breakaway, and if someone times it correctly, you can be sucked in to create this massive pack, and you've just been given four free movement points, which in this game is massive. You're trying to maximize that. In this game, Ralph beat me. He pipped me at the end there.
Because
he pipped me because of the main mechanic, which is the other main mechanic is the exhaustion mechanic, which is if you want to go and be the front of the pack to try and win, you can. However, every turn that you're in the front of a pack, you get an exhaustion card. An exhaustion card is only two movement. Now, they don't do anything really at the start of the game because you put them into your discard pile. But I must have gotten at least six exhaustion cards per rider. And at the very last turn of the game, I only draw four cards. My turn was three exhaustion cards and a three.
Yeah, so Nee spent most of our gameplay in the lead.
In the lead, from the word go. Mm. And
I kind of tried to stay in the middle form in my own pack, and Matt played it
really
well as well.
Really learning the game.
Yeah, so it's a game that's very interesting. For anyone who's a cyclist out there, you'll completely understand what we're saying when you sort of join a pack. But for those that don't, typically when you watch the Tour de France, everyone's sort of bundled together.
Peloton.
Yeah, that's right. So, less effort is required when you're actually on a push bike, when you're all packed together like that, like sardines in a way. And the board game captures that so well with that slipstreaming mechanic. So this is just another game where a mechanic makes it shine for the theme, which is fantastic.
The one thing I'd question is the uphill mechanic with a limit of five, right? Does that ever, why would you play a card bigger than a five? Well, except by accident.
Yeah, by accident like I did. But maybe it's all you have in your hand at the time.
It's basically to try.
Okay.
So it's kind of like you don't want to. and that's why you kind of need to time it. A lot of the game I find comes down to timing your run into the hill, because in the hill there's no drafting.
I think because we played a shorter race, I didn't feel that at all.
Yeah, so the game has like a deck of cards or something. Well, there's a lot of maps that you can play, and you can form your own Tour de France in a way and play over multiple sessions, much like Formula D as well.
Well, one of the things that they do over multiple sessions as well is that you actually take exhaustion from one race, you half it, and then you put that into your starting deck. So it's like, you can go hard in one race if you want, but then you have to deal with the effects of having the exhaustion in your legs in the next race. So that's something that I want to try out as well. I do find that this game, though, we did play the short track, so you didn't actually probably feel it. Like, I wouldn't
every time I did the draw, I had a pretty good range of cars to pick from.
So you feel like it overstays its welcome on the full tracks?
No, I don't think it does. Okay. I think the full track is actually where it shines, because I wouldn't have actually played the race that I did.
Yeah, you're playing very quickly.
Because I was like, I know this is a short track, so I'm just going to go to the front and just see if I can get to the finish line before the exhaustion hits me. And unfortunately, I didn't. Like, it got me literally on that turn.
You made a good track, Nick.
I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's my favorite race game. But there are a few other games that I do want to bring up that start, like, these are our kind of, I would say, these are our real gateway-friendly games. Now, Formula D, Downforce, and Flamme Rouge, even though it's my favorite game, Flamme Rouge is very easy to pick up and play. But I tell
you what, as a board gamer, Flamme Rouge, I would love to play that more. Like, that's the one of these three, four games we mentioned tonight that you just want to play more and more of.
Yeah. There are a couple of games that I do want to bring up as we can't start coming to an end, though, because I want to tell people about a few games that actually really bring in different mechanics into the world of the race genre. The first one is called The Quest for El Dorado. And The Quest for El Dorado is a game where we are all basically Indiana Jones archetypes, and we are basically starting in one end of the forest, and we then need to get to the other end of this forest using, like, cutting through forest, going over mountains, going through rivers and whatnot, and we have to get to the city of El Dorado. First one there wins. But the way the game works is it adds the mechanic of deck building into it. So you start with a hand of cards that we all have the same ones, and they can do some very basic things like cutting through one forest or going over one thing. But then you can start to build your deck to get cards that allow you to go through five forests and start powering through, and things that allow you to draw more cards. We played a game of this at the MacArthur Board Gamers Meetup on Friday. I lost by literally one hex. I was on the space right before El Dorado. And again,
we should rename the episode tonight.
I got pipped twice tonight and in El Dorado. But my deck, when I played El Dorado, I started slow because I just bought a whole bunch of cards. I had a strategy where I'm like, I'm going to buy this card, which allows me to get any card that I want from the market. So I did, and the cards I was going after were ones that allowed me to draw more cards. But by doing that, I bloated up, because I had to get some other cards to allow me to move. I bloated my deck, but then I got to a point where I was able to discard cards out of my hand completely and bench them from the game. So my hand went from like 6 to 13 cards and then back to 9 or something like that. And I had two turns in a row where I literally picked up every single card in my hand and played them all. And Damien, who, if you're listening, his son was playing it, and he said, I didn't know you could play the game like this. He's like 12.
Talk about a big combo, big points.
Yeah,
right,
well, it was huge combo, right? And I literally got to the point where I'm like, I was trying to rush towards the end because I knew that James was working on something similar. And I got to the spot before El Dorado, and then I'm like, I got there, and he was two turns later, but it last in turn order, and I went, I think I've just lost this game, because I was like, in my head, I was kind of timing and going, I had to get there this turn, and I would have won had it, because I had more of the tiebreaker than he did. And sure enough, he just, and he went, and I'm like, damn it! I knew I needed to get there this turn.
Is there a boulder chase in this one?
No, but there are, like, you can buy
without a boulder chase.
Well, you know, you can go into the caves in the expansion and come out with treasure that helps you somehow in the race. I don't know how, I haven't played it in a long time.
That sounds really cool. Yeah. I have heard a lot about that game.
It's actually just about to get a reprint. So the cards are actually like the quarter size cards, except in the reprint, they're now full size. So the reprint, look out for, because I highly recommend it. It's just a whole bunch of cards. It's really good. The other one that I want to give a shout out to, which is Reese. He's another member, one of our friends. He loves a game called Cubitos.
Oh, I've never played that.
I haven't played it either, but I do know, I've seen the review of it. But Cubitos is basically
a board game.
It's a dice drafting game where you race cubes around, you're racing your cube around a racetrack, but each of these cubes have different powers and all this fun stuff. So if you're looking for the next step up, and also a game, I can't really talk much more about it because I haven't played it, but Reese has got it and he's been saying in our group, I want to play it more. Cubitos, he wants to play that one. The other one that I've been playing a bit on Board Game Arena, however, is Automobiles. And Automobiles is basically a Daytona race with deck building in it.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, you're trying to, like, you have to, like, use specific angles and lanes depending on what card you have and different effects that you have, and it's a three-lap race. I really highly, really like that one. I'm not going to talk about it too much because...
Yeah, I'll bring up one, actually. I love my Formula One games. Mm-hmm. I love Formula One as well. I sort of haven't been following it too much in recent years, but I completely love going down there and going to that event. But there's a board game designed by an Australian developer that's coming out, I believe, next year called Drift.
Mm-hmm.
And it works similar to Formula D, where you have gears, and it's similar to Flem Rouge, where the track is like built dynamically with little pieces, and that's how you build the road. But the gears are tiles that you put on the racetrack, okay? And they kind of interlock. So gear one, it's got a very wide open passage, and then gear two fits in there, and you can kind of pivot the tile on the map, and that's how you turn, because you can turn a bit more in gear two, but gear five, it locks into gear four, but it doesn't pivot that much because you're going faster and the tile's bigger, so you can go further along the track. Yep. So all the players are building tiles. Now, when you get to the corner, the game's called Drift, you can buy drift tiles and you can slow your car down on the corners and you get points for drifting. The points mean nothing at the end of the game, but they allow you to shop for better tiles to build your track on.
That's cool.
So it's called Drift. I think the rulebook, they said there's about 30 tracks that are there that you can configure with the pieces as well. So look out for that one. That's coming out next year.
Cool.
Awesome. Look, that's going to kind of start wrapping it up for us, because I just want to go through some of those games really quickly. So we have Downforce, Formula D, and Flam Rouge are the three that we recommend as our kind of beginner race games.
Definitely.
The next step up, we would say that we would have Longshot the Dice Game, Automobiles, and the Quest for El Dorado, and I'll add Cubitos in there as well. And then we haven't talked about them, but if you really like these style of games, I do want to point out to everyone that there are games such as called the Championship Racing Series. There is the Daytona 500 game. These are games that are designed to be simulator board games of these racing experiences. And if this is something that sounds interesting to you, there is a whole subcategory and genre of these racing games that you can really sink your teeth into and get that simulator feeling too. We're not going to talk about them. We're going to start, as I said, we're wrapping up, but they are there. So if something like this sounds like it's your bag, baby, then we have got this game, genre. There's something there for you. That's basically racing games in a nutshell. They are simple, they're fun, and they have a lot of good times if you're willing to put some time into it. So before we wrap this up, guys, is there any final thoughts that we that you got, or feelings, sensations that you would like to
I'm surprised we got through this episode with only like two Fast and the Furious references.
Yeah, you didn't even mention them in the racing section either.
No, I don't think we did. One of the guy's abilities, he steals VHS tapes and
roads. Where we're going, we don't need roads. That's Fast and the Furious, right?
sure.
Oh god. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, guys, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/groups/boardgamegateway. Go check out our website at www.boardgamegateway.com. You can find all the links to our social media, to our YouTube channel, and to our Discord there as well. We're starting to use our Discord a bit more, actually. We've actually got a couple of really good members. Our French friend is still in there chatting away, and Tristan down in Jinderbine, he's actually been one of the ones down there, so shout out to you guys for where I've been talking and having a good time over there. Until next time, we'd like to thank you, Matt, for I'd like to thank you for joining me once again.
Pleasure. Au revoir.
And Ralph, you too.
Yeah, goodbye.
And to you, listener, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care, guys. Bye.
See you, everyone. Love this song.